I think that one of the things that that happens is that we think of racism generally and mostly in terms of individual acts, right? So calling someone the N-word, like what just happened in Monticello, or, you know, just doing something that's awful to an individual based on their race. And it's obvious when you look at it on the surface. So whether it's a video or, you know, just an in-person incident. So it's both. It's the individual acts, but it's also the systemic or the institutionalized racism. In our country, I think more and more it's a systemic institutionalized, because people don't want to come across as being racist, right? So they're very careful as to what they say and what they do. I'm not saying that it doesn't exist. It obviously, yes, does exist. But I think that people try to be very careful. And the institutional and the systemic is just something that it's not very visible. You would have to, you know, really dig deep into laws and policies to find out what's happening.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit more. One of the things that's come up is people saying that the system is broken, and then other people saying, no, this is the system, and we need to break that. The system has been set up this way.
Yeah, yeah. And then another point, right, to that is that who makes up the system?
Right.
So it's us. It's people. I mean, the system just didn't create itself. It's us that make the system. So either we speak up, which is, you know, something that a message that is coming up more and more, right? Silence is being complicit. So if you're silent and you're complicit, then you're perpetuating those racist systems, right? So, for example, if I'm, you know, I work at with three different colleges now, and if I notice, for example, that the cabinet members of each one of those institutions that I'm working with are all white individuals, you know, and I don't mean to say, you know, I don't want to come across as if I'm against white folks. That's not my point. But if each one of those cabinets are made up of only white individuals, then the experiences and the ideas and the thoughts of Black or Native American or Latinx individuals won't be at the table. Right. And they're the ones that are making policies. They're the ones that are writing whatever policies rule the institutions.
And that is,
does that make sense?
Yeah, that is your job. Mm-hmm. You are you're in charge of diversity and inclusion at SUNY. How do you go about that if you do see these changes? Not saying that is what you're seeing, but if you do notice this, how do you in your job go about affecting that change?
Right. So one of the things, one of the initiatives in SUNY and the entire SUNY system throughout New York is to diversify faculty, for example. So we have a large population. Our student body is more and more diverse, but yet the faculty does not reflect, the makeup of faculty does not reflect that diversity. So one of the things that SUNY system is doing and putting money into it is trying to diversify faculty. So when, you know, so if I were to bring it up, we end up talking, we have conversations with faculty union, with different, you know, different administrators, just to see, okay, so what can we do in order to bring in faculty of color, so that students can see themselves reflected and that the ideas and the teachings, you know, reflect the experiences of people of color in our nation and in SUNY specifically.
Have you had any pushback in your role when it comes to trying to make these changes?
Yes, absolutely. And it's the same kind of pushback that we hear in the nation regarding, let's say, the police killings. There are individuals that will say, well, you know, why do we look at race? Race divides. We shouldn't be looking at race. There's only one race, and it's the human race. But if we continue to look at things that way, and then we're blind to the negative impact or the negative outcomes that we're having. And, you know, with the police killings, for example, it's really interesting how this is huge uprising, you know, after the George Floyd killing, and I'm trying to figure out why that is, right? Because we have had numerous Black individuals that have been killed by police, and there have been uprisings and demonstrations and rallies, but there's something different happening today, and I'm trying to figure that out. I keep listening to all the different experts right on TV just to hear what they're saying.
What are you thinking now? What is your current thinking about it?
I think what's happening. This is, and I'm quoting, not necessarily quoting, but I'm saying what Van Jones over, and you know, one of the CNN contributors mm-hmm. was saying, is that the message is filtering in to different pockets of our population that didn't happen before, and before. The pushback around the police killings of Black folks, you would hear comments like, well, if they didn't talk back, or if they didn't run away from the police, or maybe if they wouldn't have been doing X, Y, and Z, then it wouldn't have happened. But the videos that we've seen lately, the Black individuals that got murdered weren't doing anything, right? So George Floyd was just laying on the ground as he was being killed. Breonna Taylor was just in her room sleeping when she got killed. So I think that that's raising a different level of awareness in individuals from before to say, wait a second, these folks weren't doing anything. You know, Ahmaud, even though he wasn't killed by the police, but he was hunted down and killed, and he wasn't doing anything. I mean, if his crime, the only crime, if we want to put that, and I'm putting that in quotes, was to go into a house that was under construction, then we also saw the videos of other people that went into the same house, and they weren't chased down and killed, right? So I think that that's what's happening, is that people are saying they can't find any excuses now.
Do you think that it's also because there are more people paying attention, because the pandemic has forced more people to stay at home and more people are not distracted by other things?
Tim, I was just thinking about that this morning. Yes, right. So, like, we're at home. We're all working from home, or we're just, you know, the news is on all the time. So, yeah, I think that that's part of it as well. People are paying more attention to what's going on than in the past. I mean, we're all so busy. So when we're not, you know, before the pandemic, we were just out and working and doing, you know, the things that we normally do day to day. But recently, we're mostly all at home, paying attention to the news.
And
I agree.
In terms of this moment, what do you think the biggest challenge is for this moment for folks to continue to press for change?
So I think the biggest challenge is knowing what the next steps are, right? So America has listened. America is paying attention. America is protesting. Demonstrating, and that's great. But I think the next step would be, so what do we do about it now? You know, we don't want any more George Floyds. We don't want any more Breonna Taylors or Tamir Rice or, you know, any of the individuals that were killed. So what do we do then? How do we change the laws or the policies in order to reduce or eliminate the racism that are inherent in them? That, I think, is the biggest challenge. I don't know. You know, we need leadership to go in and say, okay, this is what we're going to do. Similar to the Black Lives Matter movement, right? We have several individuals that are in there that are sort of the leads. And they're before Congress or before the powers that be in order to effect change. So what are we going to do now? That, to me, is the biggest challenge, the next steps.
And do you think that attention will wane, or do you think that people are so engaged and so outraged that there has to be change because of this wave that's been unleashed?
I don't think it's going to wane. I'm hoping that it doesn't, right? I think that, you know, the memorial service took place for George Floyd, and we still have people that are protesting, people that are out in the streets. We're having several rallies right here in Sullivan County, one in Calicoon on Sunday and in Fallsburg on Saturday. So I don't think it's going to wane. I think that we're going to see something. I think we're going. This is really going to change our laws. I'm hoping. I'm being optimistic.
And in terms of leadership, what do you want to hear from the leaders of this country? Where do you think this leadership will come from, and what do you want to hear?
So I want our leaders in Congress and the Senate to look at the laws that are causing the systemic racism. So let's say, for example, right, we know that that police receive immunity. It's in our Constitution. They receive immunity for using excessive force. And it protects them, right? So the Constitution protects the police. And there are cases where police do need to use excessive force in order to do their jobs. And I get that. But it sort of seems to be very broad. I think that narrowing it down might help in order to eliminate some of these actions. That's way up on the federal level, national level.
What about the local level? What can listeners do? How can they take this passion and turn it into something more concrete to change this?
Yeah, so I think the very first thing that we need to do, and I'm thinking of just Sullivan County, all right? I think the very first thing that we need to do is become informed of what's going on. Like, I just found out today that Fallsburg, I want to start off by saying that I respect the police, and, you know, I'm for police force. Let me put it that way, okay? So that nobody comes back at me and says you're against the police. But in Fallsburg, for example, where we have a large population of Black and Latinos, we only have one police officer that's a Black man, and that's our police chief. I had no idea that we had none, right? So I think that that's really important for us to be able to be intentional in bringing in more police officers of color into the police force. Now, we know that there's just because you're a Black man or you're Latino doesn't necessarily mean that you're for justice or for equity. I'll put that out there as well. But I think that it's really important for our town boards, for our police force, and even up at the legislature to start getting informed as to the discrepancies that exist within our own county, right? So whether it's in education, whether it's in health, whether it's in housing, I mean, even the individuals that make up, and I don't know what that number is, Tim, but I know that the employees of the county are overwhelmingly white. Why is that? Why is it that we don't have more people of color working for the county, right? So we need to find that out, and the individuals, our residents of Sullivan County, need to go in and start asking questions, and start demanding more of our elected officials, of our board.
I follow Austin Channing, who is a writer and a speaker about racial justice, and she posted something this week saying, "You can't choose justice and the status quo." She said that because she had received an email from a white woman who wants to know how she could support racial justice, but without risk. And
without risk.
Yeah. And she said, "I'm sorry, it's not possible. To be anti-racist is to be active."
Mm-hmm.
And do you agree that is something you have to do? You have to ask these hard
100%.
Questions about.
You have to question. You have to question. And if you're going to be anti-racism, I mean, just by the term alone, right, means that you can't be silent. You just cannot continue doing the same thing and saying the same thing. You have to be outspoken. You have to ask the questions, and that's uncomfortable for many people. It's very uncomfortable to discuss race, to talk about race, to discuss the disparities, the disproportionality. And one thing that happens, Tim, that really offends me and makes me feel enraged is when Black individuals are speaking up, oftentimes either they're not listened or they're not taken seriously, which then causes individuals to get emotional, right, to raise their voices, and then, you know, then they're discounted as being angry, and they're not being, you know, we can't listen to them because they're not being rational, right? So we don't, so it's almost like we're putting to the side those same individuals that have the experiences, that have encountered discrimination, that have, you know, lived in fear. We're discounting them. We don't want to hear them. We might listen a little bit, and then once they get a little too emotional, we don't want to hear them anymore. And that's just wrong. We need to listen. We need to listen to the folks that are being, that are the ones targeted, right? The ones receiving the discrimination, the ones that are in fear for their lives. We need to listen to them.
If you had to assign some homework to people that are listening about how they can make effective change about race, what would that be? Listening would be one.
Yeah, I'll tell you one not to do. Don't expect your Black friends to explain everything to you. I'm saying that, you know, I'm not African American, but this is what I have heard from my own friends, and that they're tired of having to explain the same thing over and over and over and over again. So if you are a white individual that really wants to know what to do, do the research, do the reading, find out on your own. There are just so many books out there. I just posted a list of books that are anti-racist, or for, you know, to become an anti-racist, to know how to be an anti-racist individual. Books from Ibram Kendi himself, you know, the title of the book is How to Become Anti-Racist, and you have Warmth of Other Suns, and you have, I mean, there's just so many books out there written by individuals of color to explain what it is that we need to do in this fight. And for white folks that are, that don't know how to engage in the conversation, the book by Robin DiAngelo, amazing, White Fragility, written by a white woman for white folks. So my recommendation is go out and learn. Learn what it is that's happening, find out the facts, and become knowledgeable on how to address the issue.
And you mentioned that what you've heard from some folks in the Black community is that they're tired. You also mentioned that they should take care of themselves, too. There should be some self-care for the community.
Mm-hmm.
How so?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think at this point, the way things are today, every single one of us needs to just make sure that we do some self care, because if not, it's hard. This is really difficult on everyone, right? So I mean, mostly on the Black community, but it's also very. There's a lot of stress. There's a lot of tension. There's just so many things going on right now. And then this happening, you know, with George Floyd just added to that, right? So somebody pointed out how we have the pandemic is threefold today. So it's health, right? We have the COVID-19 to worry about. It's also financial. We have a financial pandemic that we're dealing with. And then we're also dealing with the racism pandemic. So there's a lot going on, and it's affecting every single individual in our country. So I think all of us need to do some self-care. We need to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves.
I was just thinking, in your position as, you know, in charge of being in charge of diversity and inclusion, does this moment in time make your job easier, or does it make it harder?
So I think it depends, right? So it depends on leadership. So I've been fortunate enough to be working with leaders, with presidents that are engaging the community. So for example, SUNY Ulster that I work with, we're going to be holding some Zoom, I want to call them forums, and opening them up to the community, the campus community, just to engage in conversations, you know, just to find out how people are feeling, just letting people express themselves. So we're going to start doing that. I want to say it's next week. I'm moving away from SUNY Ulster, Sullivan, and Orange to SUNY Cortland, and that's going to start in August. But I just joined them in a Zoom meeting with their students, faculty, and staff last week. And over 200 people were in attendance, and it was emotional. It was raw. I mean, it was just, we just listened. So it's difficult, but at the same time, depending on leadership, it can be easier because I can do what I know is right, what I think is right. And right now, the most important thing is to listen and find out. You know, just let people express themselves. Right? There's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of fear. It's just. Yeah, so it's not really more difficult. I think that the difficult part is just hearing people and hearing their pain. That's the difficult part.
What are some of the things you heard during that call?
There's a lot of anger. There's a lot of anger, toward police. There's a lot of anger toward individuals in power. So whether it's our elected officials, there's a lot of fear. There are students, black students, that were crying, you know, saying how this is the fear that they live with day in and day out, right? Am I going to get stopped? If I get stopped by the police, what's going to happen to me? So there's this real fear. And there's obviously there's hope as well. I mean, there were individuals that had hope that that everything that has happened is actually, you know, like turning us into a sort of guiding us into a better place. So there's that hope as well. But overwhelmingly, there was a lot of anger and fear and just raw emotions, a lot of crying.
Is there anything else you'd like to leave folks with?
I think when you brought up the self-care, I think that's like one of the most important things to do right now is just to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves. And you know, balancing that with also being active. Not just staying at home and listening to the news, but finding out what it is that you can do in order to show solidarity with the Black community.
Lorraine Lopez-Genove, the Chief Diversity Officer for SUNY, three of their community colleges in Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Tim, thank you so much for having me.